start by thanking my collaborators. One of them is in the room, Lindsay Sentner, Marjorie McMenahan, Lorraine Boyd, all of whom are from the New York City Department of Health and Mental Health, and my colleague Marianne Chassan, who is also from MHRA, as I am. Evidence of the risks and benefits of bed sharing is mixed and complicated. However, citing research that shows bed sharing is related to SIDS and to other causes of infant mortality, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that infants do not bed share. Other research has shown that there are additional risks for adverse outcomes from bed sharing if a bed sharing mother is overweight or obese, smokes, or drinks alcohol. Let me be sure that we're all clear on what our key concepts are. First of all, bed sharing is defined as an adult or older child sharing a sleep space with an infant. Second, we calculated BMIs from mothers' reported height and weight, and from these we defined overweight as a BMI from 25 to 29, and obese as a BMI of 30 or more. Our definition of substance use derives from mothers' self-reports on tobacco or alcohol use in the 6 months prior to the interview. The sample for our study included 178 English or Spanish-speaking mothers from two WIC sites in Brooklyn, New York. These mothers had singleton infants a year old or younger. Our goal was to describe the prevalence of bed sharing and the correlates of bed sharing. We also sought to find any additional risk factors that might lead to adverse outcomes from bed sharing. We used chi-square and logistic regressions in our analyses. And it should be noted that no matter how old the child was, we asked the mother about infant sleeping practices when the child was less than 3 months old, which the literature shows is a very vulnerable period. In terms of our analyses, we had demographic information such as mother's age, educational level, and marital status. We also asked the mothers to describe what they thought were the best infant sleeping location and position, and where they got their information about these. In addition, they were asked what were the usual sleeping location and position for their infants, both during the night and during the day. All interviews were completed by very experienced bilingual interviewers. As you might expect, our sample was very diverse. Half of the respondents were Hispanic, around 17% each were black, white, or other. There was a very, very high percentage of foreign-born women, 67% who came from a total of 27 different named countries. Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and Ecuador were the top three foreign birthplaces. Here are some of the demographic and health factors. The mean age of the mothers was 26.6 years. The mean age of the infants was 3.7%. There was a relatively high percent of cesareans, 27%, considering that all the births were singleton births, and these mothers were fairly young. When asked if they ever breastfed their infant, 73% of the mothers said yes. Mothers reported that fully 98% of their infants had a regular source of pediatric care. Although all the respondents were WIC clients, and all of them had a regular source of medical care for their infants, only 72% had ever received any information at all about infant sleeping practices. Of these, only 55% had received information from a doctor or nurse, while 44% had received information from one of the baby's grandmothers. While most of the mothers, close to 90%, said that a crib or bassinet was the best place for a baby to sleep, 7% said that a mother's bed was the best place for a baby to sleep. These figures differed from the usual place for a baby to sleep. When asked what was the usual place for their baby to sleep at night, 19% of the mothers said in a bed with them. For a similar question about daytime sleeping, 10% of the mothers said that their babies usually slept with them in a bed. Total, about a quarter of the mothers shared a bed with their infants at some time, either during the night or the day. We found that there were factors related to whether women had gotten information from a doctor or a nurse. Black women, U.S.-born women, and women with a high school education or more were significantly more likely to have received information about infant sleeping practices from a doctor or nurse. We cannot tell from our survey, however, whether this is because the health providers gave them such information freely or the women themselves asked for the information. There were no significant relationships between any of the maternal demographics and receiving information from a grandmother about infant sleeping practices. In our bivariate analyses, there were no significant associations between demographic factors and bed sharing. For example, as you can see in the slides, while blacks and Hispanics appear to be more likely to bed share than other women, these differences were not statistically significant. Again, in the bivariate analysis, we found that women with a cesarean delivery were more likely than others to bed share both during the night and during the day. The daytime difference was significant. 18.4% of women with a cesarean were daytime bed sharers, and 6.2% of women who had had a vaginal delivery were daytime bed sharers. We did separate logistic analyses to predict nighttime bed sharing and daytime bed sharing. What you see first are the variables in the nighttime bed sharing. These were all dichotomous. The predictors included mother's age, birthplace, race, ethnicity, language, education, marital status, cesarean delivery, and ever having breastfed this infant. Okay, we're always talking about the infant that she most recently had. As you can see in this slide and in the next slide, there were no significant predictors for nighttime bed sharing. We did a similar analysis for daytime bed sharing and found that there were two factors that significantly increased the likelihood of bed sharing. First of all, black women were more than 5 times more likely to bed share during the daytime than women of other racial and ethnic groups. And women who had a cesarean were almost 4 times more likely to bed share during the day than women who had not had a cesarean. In addition to focusing on these correlates of bed sharing, we looked at some of the demographic and perinatal factors that are related to additional risks if you do bed share. Among the factors that are cited in the literature that we looked at are mother's overweight or obesity, mother's use of tobacco, and mother's use of alcohol. What you see here is any bed sharing at all. Characteristics of mom had either nighttime or daytime bed sharing. Of these women, fully 42.5% were overweight and 27.5% were obese. Fewer were smokers, 9.3%, or drank alcohol, 11.6%. So for our sample, it appears that the most important additional risk factor among mothers who bed share is excess weight. And so from our study, we conclude grandmothers are a very important source of information about infant sleeping practices, as we see from other research that they are about just about everything, including feeding practices. While few women say that bed sharing is the best practice for an infant, almost 3 times this figure bed share at night, and all in all, almost 1 in 5 are nighttime bed sharers. Women who delivered by cesarean are more likely to bed share, whether it be at night or during the day. And among women who do bed share, there are substantial numbers with the added risk of overweight or obesity. What we think is that the lack of statistically significant differences in our study may be due to the fact that we had a relatively small sample. And we have been in discussions with the Department of Health about expanding this study to a much, much larger sample. We just have a few recommendations based on our findings. First of all, that healthcare providers should be encouraged to speak with mothers and other caregivers about the best infant feeding practices. Second, that educational programs about the best infant feeding practices, need to go beyond traditional healthcare settings, particularly to reach older relatives of young mothers, like the grandmothers that we've mentioned. And lastly, that specific subgroups of women, for example, women who are overweight or obese, need special, stronger messages about the risks of bed sharing. Thank you very much.
We have time for one or two questions, if anyone has questions. Okay.
We have the same question.
Excuse me, can you come and talk in the mic because they're recording the session? Thank you.
This is actually something that I've discussed with my co-authors, including Lindsay, who's in the audience. And after we found this, I went back through the literature on bed sharing and additional risks, and I really didn't find anything about, you know, cesareans and bed sharing. I'm a little reluctant to speculate until we perhaps can go further. Perhaps it has something to do with bonding, but please don't quote me on that. We simply don't have the explanation in our data set, but would certainly like to go forward and find reasons. Lindsay, do you want to add anything? But I don't know if they even looked at it in other studies. You know, going back to the part of what we did through our relationship with the Department of Health was a very thorough literature search, international literature search, actually. And I don't recall in any of those studies that they specifically looked at cesarean as, you know, a predictor of bed sharing.
Okay, next question.
Yes. Yes, they did. And the other interesting thing was that in the process of doing this study, we talked to some people from Philadelphia, is that correct, who were giving out cribs? And so there you are. This woman from Philadelphia is giving out cribs. And so we asked, you know, if the Department of Health gave you a crib, would you want one? And, you know, it wasn't overwhelmingly yes. It didn't seem to be an issue as much as you might think in this group of relatively disadvantaged women. They had cribs. Pardon me?
Well, I guess over 3 years we've had, I guess, around 8,000 requests.
From New York City?
No, Philadelphia.
From Philadelphia. I'm not saying they don't want them. But, you know, there may be some kind of, like, stigma factor to saying yes on a survey as opposed to calling up and getting one.
Okay, next question.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the influence of grandmothers? Is that a specific question for the source of information, or perhaps it was how they influenced their behavior?
No, we asked an open-ended question about who gave you information about infant feeding. I'm doing infant feeding now, so this is like, you know. Infant sleeping. Who gave you information about infant sleeping practices? And of the women who said they got information, 44% said that grandma was the source of that information. And it was either the mother's mother or the partner's mother. And they were quite often, we also asked, who would you trust the most? They were quite often the ones who were trusted the most. But I was actually surprised that in this group of women who's very much engaged in, you know, a national nutritional program, that there was a substantial proportion who had never gotten any information about infant sleeping practices.
Is that different by race at all?
No, that's, I said there were no demographic factors related to getting information from grandma.
Okay, one more question, then we'll...
We were, in this study, focusing on the location and not the position, but we do have information on the position, which we will hopefully analyze later on. And as I recall, Lindsay, again, if you can help me, of the racial and ethnic groups, the ones who are most likely to have the unhealthy position as the best position were African-American.